Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 791. It's the 2nd of June, 2017. Got to start off with an apology. I've got a feature called One Via Watchlist, where listeners to the podcast suggest stocks that other people should do some research on and maybe add them to the watchlist. It's all information. Nothing is intended as investment advice. But I haven't had any stocks suggested for a while, or so I thought, because I used to get notifications every day. Turns out I wasn't getting notifications. So I just checked earlier today, and I've got a handful of stocks suggested, so I'll get to that next week. In the meantime, I do apologise if you've submitted a stock. I will get back onto it next week. There's a handful there, and I'll go through them. Listen, by all means, get involved here. If you know of a company that you think has potential, and you think other people should do some research on it, then please suggest it, as I will start covering this very actively starting next week. And so to get there, basically, go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog, scroll down the page there in one of my blog posts, and you'll see a big picture of the word watchlist with a magnifying glass over it and a link below that saying, please click here to fill in the form, and I could feature it on a future podcast. So do that, and I'll feature it on a future podcast, as it says there. I'm just repeating myself here. Anyway, on the podcast today, I have Chris Bailey, founder of financialorbit.com, covers the following stocks: Barclays, Johnson Matthey, and Rango Resources. Also, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about the following stocks: Cadence, that's KDNC, Andalas Energy and Power, and Eland Oil and Gas, that's ELA. Plus, I also have top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and top three. Why three? Today was a very quiet RNS day. Very few RNSs. It's almost like the RNS machine went on holiday on the weekend early. So there's top three most liked RNSs in the last 24 hours too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of financialorbit.com. You all right, Chris?
Hello, Justin. Not too bad. Thank you. Not too bad.
Now, did you see the debate? I think people have probably forgotten it by now, but a couple of nights ago, in the leaders' debate without the leader of the main party.
So, I still think she should have made a surprise appearance, sort of dropped in.
Yes, I thought
surprise
that.
Everyone, I'm back type thing. But that would have been ultra cool, but clearly not in line with what contemporary politicians get up to, unless they're in the States, of course, and running for president. Ultimately, for me, I felt it was a mistake not to turn up. But in terms of policies and related, what can we discern from this? And I think the reality is it's a complete mess. And what appeared to be a cast iron certain conservative win has become somewhat closer. I still think they will prevail, but clearly the impact on the markets or the pound could be more problematic, more troublesome if things are a bit closer. There's a bit more of that dreaded word uncertainty. Saying that, look what's happened in the last few days. FTSE 100 kicking around all-time highs. The pound has made a little bit of a renaissance move after plunging on that dire-looking YouGov poll a few days ago. So, the world is remarkably benign. And if you want to characterise, I guess, the month of May with anything, it would be blooming heck. The fear index fell to levels we've never seen before. People are remarkably sanguine about the future. And for me, actually, when I look at the world, I think to myself, actually, that there are plenty of risks out there. And I think, do I want to be buying a passive fund or a tracker fund? Absolutely not. I want to be stock picking and not owning large swathes of the index.
Yeah, yeah. And someone pointed out to me, actually, about this. I did say this. And the thing is, I think Jeremy Corbyn has come across very well, more personable than a cold Theresa May. And like you said, she's not cool enough to sort of step in there, surprise everyone, and turn up that debate, which she should have probably done. But I did say the worrying thing about this is that Jeremy Corbyn, I've warmed him a bit, but I'm still worried about what his effect on business will be, And and people have said, Labour and business don't really mix, and it's a worrying outcome if that happens, uncertainty. But also someone did point out to me on Twitter that in fact there's no bigger uncertainty than Brexit at the moment.
I think that's fair, and I think this is why the pound hasn't plunged on rising fears of a hung parliament or anything else. You know, that may, I still would say, a Conservative majority will occur. But, you know, obviously people are trying to kind of probabilistically appraise this and stuff like that. But I think the reason why the pound hasn't replunged is because some people are saying, well, hang on, if Labour or the Lib Dems have a little bit more influence, then maybe Brexit might be softer, and hence some of that fear factor in the pound may abate. I think that's a difficult argument because, unfortunately, you just don't get the Brexit stuff. You get the potential push for nationalisations on certain areas. As you say, Justin, some concerns about, you know, how business-friendly the political backdrop is, and all of that other gubbins wrapped around political uncertainty, which typically and traditionally is not good for the currency, and you know, typically not good for the economy either. But yeah. There you go.
Yeah, okay.
We'll see.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see in the end. I mean, we've got all this, you know, economists predicting stuff, and very rarely it's reality. We never know until this happened. Okay, let's have a look at some stocks. What have you been looking at this week, Chris, in the bigger cap space?
So on Thursday, Wednesday and Thursday, actually, Barclays came out with some news about their Africa unit, and they're selling down their stake. That's been well publicised already. But what was kind of interesting on Thursday morning, they talked more about how there'd been great demand for the sale of their shares in their Africa unit, and they'd actually extended the size of it, so reducing their stake more quickly than people thought. Now, you know, for me, Africa's an interesting part of the world strategically, and some people would say, well, why on earth are Barclays doing this? They're doing this because they want to simplify, and, you know, they're perceiving that Africa is better managed by people closer to the action in that part of the world, not out of London, etc. And you have to say, simplification stories in businesses typically work. I wasn't surprised to see Barclays shares both on, sort of in the immediate aftermath of the announcement, pushing up. I think it's a good move. And after a bit of a annus horribilis concerning old Jez Staley and his whistleblower antics and getting mugged over that little fake email debacle, etc., this is Barclays pushing back and actually, I think, indicating to me that there's value there. I've always felt Barclays should be a 250 to 300 pence share over the last year or two. It's been trading much closer to that 200p level, and it's still kicking around the 210 pence level as we speak. I think there's value. And I think for investors looking for a story which is centered on simplification, on internal driven change, in a still, as we've talked about, uncertain economic and political environment, I think Barclays has something going for it. So pleased to see the announcement there, albeit a bit sad that, you know, the big Barclays empire is slowly breaking up.
Yeah, and they are edging towards that £2 level, aren't they? Which is, it's just there or below, it seems, you know, quite a bit of support. In fact, around about 2.5, it seems quite a bit of support there. So on a risk-reward basis, it looks quite attractive, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. You get a little bit of yield, a couple of percent or so. But I think the story here is value. And ultimately, you know, they've got a fairly boring and mainstream UK retail business. They've got things like Barclaycard, which actually are pretty high return businesses in the wider scheme of things. And then the investment banking side, which is variable, but not too bad. And put it all together, I think there's a bit of value there. So for people who are not widows and orphans looking for something a little bit different in the FTSE 100, I'd highlight Barclays for you.
Yeah, okay, cool. And anything else you'd like to get?
One other one which reported again on Thursday morning was Johnson Matthey, which is a well-known name in sort of platinum and palladium refining, a little bit of recycling, and then some clever sort of environmental related businesses helping to reduce pollution via things like catalytic converters and related. So a business which is set up, you would have thought, well for the future world, a world where things like pollution and control and related become much more important. And certainly you look at the legislation in all countries, apart from potentially where President Trump is taking the states, all countries are tightening legislation. And this is to the benefit of companies like Johnson Matthey with the sort of the technology and the intellectual property to kind of benefit from, I don't know, tighter truck emissions regulations in a China or an India and stuff like that. So there's not many companies with their kind of their intellectual property. And this is why it's been a share that has attracted me over the kind of the medium to longer term. If you look at the share price chart today, I do love my round numbers. We are coming back towards that £30 a share level. I think that's a really interesting level for this company. Not a cheap company, but a good company, if you know what I mean. Yeah. They said all the right things in terms of their update on Thursday morning. So bottom line is, a bad day in the markets, £30 or sub £30 a share in Johnson Matthey, worth a look.
Yeah, good news for you, I think. I just retweeted a piece from Zero Hedge, actually, and he's saying hedge funds are now piling into gold at its fastest pace since 2007. So should be good for Randgold, shouldn't it?
It should be good for Randgold, yeah. And you've seen, obviously, the Randgold share price has moved up, you know, north of that £70 support level in recent days on the back of gold going up. I think I read a stats talking about, what was it, five successive positive monthly moves for the gold price, which, you know, best run for a number of years. So for me, you've got to have a bit of gold, and you've got to have a bit of gold because ultimately it's a world of too much money out there, too much debt. And it's a good hedge, a good contrast with perhaps your more mainstream equity and related allocations. To that mind, jump back to Johnson Matthey, there should be a bit of positiveness from there, because things like refining and recycling of precious metals, that becomes a little bit more remunerative when the metals prices, precious metal prices go up. And also there tends to be a little bit of a link between things like platinum and the gold price. They don't tend to move too far out of kilter for too long. So yeah. We'll see. So I think there are some angles there as well.
Yeah, and also, you know, you've got to take into account we are at market highs, and we're going into the summer season here, a bit of uncertainty around. And so, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see a bit of a correction, because you normally get it over the summer months. So, you know, it's maybe worth... Cause, like I say, when you ever look at some, you know, historic highs, within almost... I looked back at it once, and this is obviously a non-scientific view, and it's not definitive by any means. But I was looking back, and it's like something like within... Every, you know, major year high or multi-year high, you'll see a big fall off, you know, within the next 6 to 12 months, almost a big correction, you know. So it's swings and roundabouts. It was like a pendulum, isn't it, the stock market? It goes up high and it retests then that support. So, I think, you know, risk. Yeah. If you want to always have a bit of gold in your portfolio, I think it's always a good thing.
I think it's a good mixer asset. And I think the bottom line is this. The aim is to buy low and sell high. And when things are typically and generally high, you've got to be a bit more sort of thoughtful about the markets. And this is why I would not be buying index funds. I'll be picking my stocks and picking my angles. I think that's the key for this moment in time, for the rest of the year and into 2018. Goodness only knows what the politicians will get up to, but generally, of course, it's not that good. So bottom line is, yeah, pick your stocks and sell your index funds would be my top advice.
Marvellous, Chris. Thanks for that. Speak next week. Have a nice weekend.
Same to you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. How are you, Al? You all right?
I'm very good, thanks, Jess. Yep, enjoying life down here on the South Coast. Can't wait to the elections next week. Get my vote in and get all this out of the way.
Yeah, it's getting quite close now. Surveys, polls suggest, which, we know how they've performed over the last couple of years. But
Don't believe them.
Yeah, I think if anything, what happened here, we'll see. Like I've said before, people, I think Conservatives were quite blasé before because they're that 20-point lead or whatever. And now it's going to be closer. I think if anything, the Conservatives thought, it's in the bag. And they may have not turned out a vote. May turn out now because they realise it's a lot closer. So I still think May will win. But that's all.
But I think this whole dementia tax thing has been handled abysmally by the spin and the PR doctors in the Conservative Party. I mean, it's just I think it's been poorly thought through. I think it should be based on the amount of tax the individual pays in the lifetime. But I mean, there are all sorts of things we can discuss, and obviously we're not going to discuss that. That's not our bag. But I just think if they thought it through more carefully ahead of the launching the manifesto, then they'd be it wouldn't be an issue. But I think Jeremy Corbyn and Diane Abbott are conspiring to blow it by themselves anyway. So
I mean, listen, I think both in my mind, Jeremy Corbyn. I saw a bit of him on the One Show last night. And he is good at chatting, you know, at small talk. And he's a bit warmer as a personality than Theresa May. Theresa May is like a bit of a robot, you know. She, unless she's talking about policy, I think she hasn't got a life outside that, you know, pretty much.
Yeah.
And they've tried to personalise her a little bit. It's not working, you know. They've put her and her husband on one show, and it almost seemed almost scripted, very careful questions to ask. But she comes across as quite a cold person, you know. And she's done a lot of U-turns. She hasn't done herself any favours. And I think, you know, Jeremy Corbyn's previous links. But he's come across a lot better, you know, as a person than her, I think, you know.
I agree. I've seen some of these YouTube clips of him talking with voters, and just he was chatting with I think a grime artist. I happened to watch this the other week, and yeah, he was very articulate and just really a man of the people, which is great. But I think if he were a man of the people, and if he had his house in order, and he had a very clear cut policy on what he was going to do in regard to negotiating Brexit, and also grasp of the numbers as well. And obviously, you know, Diane Abbott blew it first of all, but, you know, frankly, no one really...
They've got to give her the... I mean, she is a liability, you know. They've got to give her the elbow. They want to score any points. She, every time she does an interview, it seems, or every other time, she literally creates, you know, drops a bomb, doesn't she?
And, she's a joke. I mean, she's a complete joke, but then again, she always was. I mean, I don't think anyone ever took her seriously anyway. And, you know, the whole... the credibility of the Labour Party was almost fatally undermined when she was on that LBC interview, and I don't think it's recovered from there. But I still say to everyone when we're discussing this that I think if Labour brought back David Miliband, he's kind of the new generation Tony Blair without the WMD baggage. I think Labour would win by a country mile.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, bringing back the stop and shares, if you had a balance sheet, Diane Abbott would be on the liability section of the balance sheet. Definitely,
she would be. Yes.
Anyway,
in fact, you'd be you'd be raising money at sort of 0.0001p if she were on the balance sheet.
Every time she's okay. Let's go into stocks. What are you looking at, Al?
Okay, well, a couple of things. Firstly, Cadence Minerals just announced full year results this morning. I think that's worth a quick look. Obviously, we discussed Cadence last week, and the raft of investments in the lithium projects they have, which are at various stages. But the full year results for last year show a pre-tax profit of 0.6 million versus a 0.8 million loss the previous year. Earnings per share of 0.008p, a loss of 0.01p the previous year, and it's got 4.2 million cash in the bank as opposed to 0.9 million previously. So the company financial position has improved immensely. But I think it's the statement from Chairman Andrew Suckling that caught my attention most of all. And it's what he said was, and I'll quote, "We believe our two primary assets in Mexico and the Czech Republic will become important sources of battery-grade lithium carbonate from 2019 onward. Our two main investments and joint ventures are targeting to produce an aggregate some 55,000 tons of battery-grade lithium carbonate, which, based on analyst projections, could represent a very significant 7 to 10% of the world's supply in 2025. Now, that's pretty impressive, you know. So I said last week, you know, this is very, view Cadence very much as almost an investment fund across the lithium sector. But when two of their projects, just two of their projects, and there are numerous projects that they're engaged in, just two of those projects could represent 7 to 10% of the market in 2025. That's no mean achievement.
Yeah, cool. All right, yeah. What else are you looking at, Al? Anything else?
Just wanted to take a quick look at Andalus Energy and Power, course.
The old favourite.
Yes, indeed. And I listened with interest to what Dave Whitby had to say last week about the company coming back and the status of the projects that they're engaged in. But of course, there was a lot of controversy around the suspension of the shares. Flagged that somebody put out something on social media saying the company was raising money at 0.06p, which of course turned out to be total tosh. But you know, the fact is that it concerns me that the shares can be suspended when somebody in the social media somebody on social media can seemingly wield so much power and alarm investors to that extent. But nonetheless, the company came back. Money was raised at 0.1 pence, which is which obviously was ahead of the suspension price, which is very encouraging. But most significantly of all, the team of directors participated in the placing, and I think this was something that a lot of investors in the company had wanted to happen, simply because it's a sign of confidence in what they're doing, and it really should now set a floor in the shares in the run up to getting the permissions to commence work on the Wellhead IPP projects.
Yeah.
And of course, they've discussed those last week. I won't go into detail on those again, but suffice to say that there's a massive power shortage in Indonesia. The wellhead IPP projects extract gas from the wellhead, and the gas is used to power turbines, and of course creates a power solution, which Indonesia badly needs right now. And those government legislation have fast-tracked these projects through, and it's simply a question of actually setting the wheels in motion. Of course, Andalas has a joint venture with the state petroleum company Pertamina to do that. So it's a very exciting company. We're waiting on the permissions to be finalized so they can go ahead. But there are some 4 to 5 projects in the pipeline after the first one gets off the ground. So potentially Andalas longer term, once it's over the line, could be worth many multiples of where we are now.
Yeah, cool. All right then, and what are you? Anything else, Al? You got on your looking on your computer there? You're studying, researching.
I am indeed. Well, there's my colleague, Dr. David Paul at Vectorvest, published an article this morning, which caught my eye, and I've taken a look at the company. It's a UK oil and gas independent called Eland, E-L-A-N-D, oil and gas. The epicode is E-L-A. Operates in the Niger Delta region, Nigeria, and it's developing a portfolio of upstream oil and gas assets. On the fundamental level, an operational update was published in April, late April, and the company said it was currently producing 8,000 barrels of oil per day from the Apuama 3 well, and the production was growing. The projects were moving along at a rate of knots, but also the company had confirmed a reserve-based lending facility at Standard Chartered, which really gave it the scope and the financial clout to invest heavily in the other resources it has to develop and really scale the company up from what Vectorvest say it's well on track to become very much a mid-cap company as opposed to a small-cap oil and gas explorer as it is now. Interesting, we're also in the run-up to the full year results for the company, which are expected probably in the next few days. In the run of the results, the company's share price currently trading at 65p. Brokers Peel Hunt, Panmure Gordon and Cantor Fitzgerald have all reiterated buy ratings, and they've raised their target prices. Peel Hunt to £1, Panmure Gordon to £1.30, and Cantor Fitzgerald to £1.49. So well ahead of where we are now. Vectorvest obviously rely on a series of metrics, and of course investors can basically subscribe monthly to the program to review these metrics and explore these opportunities that are thrown up by the system. But it's got a current valuation rating of 81p per share. But the company says in summary that the pace of growth at the Apuama well could really drive Eland into mid-cap territory in the not too distant future, and it's currently a very exciting growth story. The chart as well, it looks very significant. It's in a rising trend channel, and if If listeners go to the VectorVest website, go to vectorvest.co.uk/blog, you'll see the latest report, and there's a chart there which really shows where the valuation line for VectorVest the VectorVest valuation for Eland Oil and Gas runs compared to the current performance. But the current chart is also very good looking as well.
Yeah, it is a strong uptrend there, and almost it's almost keep an eye on that 50-day moving average, because every time it touches it or just dips below it, it rises off it again. So at the moment, it's way above that. But it's almost pick your entry point if you've done your research, of course. Exorcist ELA, Eland Oil and Gas. All right, thanks for that, Bella, and speak next week.
Indeed. Okay, Jess, thanks a lot. Speak next week. Bye for now.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Alba Minerals, ALBA. I had George Franceschides on the podcast earlier in the week. At four, Alan Green just talked about them. Andlas Energy and Power, it's ADL. At three, it's always there. I think it hasn't been, maybe once in the last 5 weeks, it hasn't been in the top five. Ascent Resources, AST. At two, PCG Entertainment, that's PCGE ticker. Number one most followed, we covered the chart with Nicola Duke, technical analyst, on the podcast earlier. And by all means, subscribe to the podcast if you want to get these ready. I do three podcasts a day, so the first one is a macro, five things you need to know in the morning. And that's literally a 60 to 90 second podcast with the top five headlines around the world on big macro news. So subscribe via iTunes or Audioboom. That's the best way to get these podcasts. And like I said, number one most followed was an N4 Pharma, N4P. Okay, top three most liked RNSs due to the RNS machine being on, taking an early weekend off, I think. Very few RNSs released today on the junior markets. But three, in the last 24 hours, this is, by the way, Strategic Minerals, SML, Issue of Equity, and PDMR Dealing. At two, Keras Resources, KRS, conditional approval of Calidus Resource listing. And number one, most liked RNS, was Motive Bio proposed placing. And I also discussed the chart with Nicola Duke on an earlier podcast. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.